each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in to The Winds of Change on a Wednesday. You know what that means? Father Tom Coy's here, trying to wrinkle your brain. If you're listening on Wednesday or on the podcast through Podbean, that's where you find Winds of Change. I want to take you into the world of G.K. Chesterton today because we're having a wonderful discussion study of G.K. Chesterton at our wonderful little parish. We're reading Everlasting Man, one of his great post-conversion books. A lot of one of my favorite books of his is called Orthodoxy, and it's a powerful, powerful explanation of how to separate bad religion from good religion, true theology from false theology, whatever you want to call it. And me as a Catholic is cheering every page I turn because he's really defending and explaining so many things that are controverted in our Catholic world by non-Catholics and Catholics themselves. Anyways, but Orthodoxy was written before he was converted. Everlasting Man was a book he wrote after his conversion, and it doesn't wrestle with the particular, well, it's hard to say exactly. He doesn't take doctrine by doctrine in Orthodoxy, but he does take on the errors, the heresies that have been a part of the Catholic religious debate with Catholics and non-Catholics alike. The Everlasting Man is definitely defending faith, of course, but it's sort of like stepping back and engaging religion itself and why Catholicism is really the best or only full answer to all the religious questions that plague us. Not plague us, haunt us, maybe. Maybe that's a better word. Hey, speaking of haunting, our little parish here has a cemetery all around it, and Halloween is a special time for visitors. We don't like too many crazies coming, and we have to have a little extra security because some crazies do come in and want to wreak havoc. Particularly tipping over tombstones and making graffiti, right? Not good, not good. But we're planning to have a play in the cemetery. It's going to be actually the Monday before Halloween, Hallow's Eve Eves. And we're going to have skits of martyrs. If you go to our website, you'll see a little advertisement for that, the Monday before Halloween. So anyways, I want to engage you in some, I got to read a bunch of what Chesterton writes because he is a challenge. He's a challenge to follow. And I want to give my two cents into trying to explain it better, put it into context as it were. And it's so relevant for us today. I see his wisdom needs to be appreciated in the context of what's going on in our society today with the questions of marriage between two men or two women, so to speak, marriage. The questions of people being religious, spiritual, without wanting to be part of an organized religion, especially a Catholic Church, which wreaks havoc on your understanding of how you relate to the God you might believe, and especially the great problem of pantheism today. That's one of G.K. Chesterton's pet peeves. He refers to it as the worship of nature, and I might even put that in the context. Chesterton sees that so much of the pagan world and even the mistaken Christians fall into a worship of nature. That's a danger that too much emphasis on global warming can wreak upon the people of belief. In other words, yes, we must take care of our environment as best we can. But pantheism, or the idea that you find God in nature, or that God is nature, or that nature is your highest good, that which you would sacrifice to, or sacrifice anything to protect, as it were, even your own immortal soul, which wouldn't make sense to a person who worships nature. And for Chesterton, the worship of nature is very much connected to materialism. Those who interpret and see life and history itself, as a matter of fact, our wonderful facilitator of our Chesterton study group, Madonna Mascarello, gave me an insight which I wasn't sure of, that she pointed out, of course, that this book, Everlasting Man, was written especially in response to Chesterton's disappointment with the way an English historian by the name of Spencer wrote 12 volumes on the history of mankind, starting from ancient prehistorical man, which he sort of laughs at, that even phrase. He goes, you can't write about the prehistoric man, because if there were no history, or there was nothing known, nothing written about the ancient cavemen, you can't call it prehistory. It's not prehistoric man. History began with man, not with the advent of the books or writings about people. Anyways, so keep those two thoughts in mind. The worship of nature and what we call pantheism, and this is what so many of our young people are learning and believing in. They're abandoning their true Catholic faith because the pantheism sounds nice, and it sounds it harmonizes with the love of nature, especially if you don't have a sense of fallen nature. And you don't have a sense of fallen nature if you don't struggle against sins of the flesh. Our flesh is, of course, part of our bodily materialistic makeup. And if there's no battle against your concupiscence, is what we call it, fancy word, for that impure thoughts and deeds, right? So Chesterton wants us to be aware of the connection between worshiping nature and purely materialistic understanding of existence. That kind of dovetails into what us philosophers call metaphysics. A materialist doesn't have a metaphysics, because metaphysics really comes right from the word meta, meaning beyond physical. And so to say that there is something beyond the physical is to not be a materialist anymore. So you can't be a good Christian, you can't be a good theist if you are a materialist. And that's obviously a danger that we fall into. And that's why I say this is a good topic. It's a good point to remind ourselves of. The teaching of Chesterton is helpful when we might have the feeling that the church and those who are promoting God are abandoning the issues of, shall we say, marital morality, and highlighting almost exclusively the worry about the physical life of the planet. We certainly can worry about the physical life of the planet, but deep down we know that the planet someday, in some year in the future, is not going to last forever. So I, as a believing Catholic, don't want to tell scientists not to discuss global warming, for instance, but they can't ignore some other scientists who are saying your prognostication, your prophecy about the destruction of the earth is way premature and needs to be held back. It smacks of a political agenda that's more in keeping with weaning our human enterprise off of automobiles that drive on gasoline, fossil fuels, or even the consumption of beef or meat, as opposed to bugs these days. Some people are proposing, because cows flatulate, that gas that reaches into the atmosphere is what's creating the ozone holes, and therefore we gotta get rid of cows. There's this eerie sense that even the worry about the future of the Earth, the planet Earth, is tied to the worry that we gotta reduce the world's population. It's not enough land and food to care for the people of the earth. So there's an eerie sense that some who are promoting that kind of view of religion or science really are okay with lowering population.
St. Stanislaus Koska Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Koska Academy is conveniently located one block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
Here is an update on the Fulton Sheen petition.
We Catholics stand just inches from the goal line to have the saint we desperately need now, Venerable Fulton Sheen, publicly declared blessed. Yet new obstacles keep arising to delay this from happening. The Diocese of Peoria is now requiring the unanimous support of the U.S. bishops behind the beatification of Fulton Sheen before a new date is set for the ceremonial mass. This has never been necessary in the Church's history. The Fulton Sheen Movement's petition drive to set a new date soon for Sheen's beatification mass now has 10,000 Catholics from around the world clamoring for this. We need this voice magnified by hundreds of thousands more Catholics. And you can help us do that. Take action. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com and sign the petition and share it everywhere, because everyone agrees we need Blessed Fulton Sheen now more than ever.
By now,
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy.
I'm Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and you are listening to
The Winds of Change.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststanschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to The Winds of Change.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule, work, or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic, social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststanschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
Here is an update on the Fulton Sheen petition.
We Catholics stand just inches from the goal line to have the saint we desperately need now, Venerable Fulton Sheen, publicly declared blessed. Yet new obstacles keep arising to delay this from happening. The Diocese of Peoria is now requiring the unanimous support of the U.S. bishops behind the beatification of Fulton Sheen before a new date is set for the ceremonial mass. This has never been necessary in the Church's history. The Fulton Sheen Movement's petition drive to set a new date soon for Sheen's beatification mass now has 10,000 Catholics from around the world clamoring for this. We need this voice magnified by hundreds of thousands more Catholics. And you can help us do that. Take action. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com and sign the petition and share it everywhere, because everyone agrees we need Blessed Fulton Sheen now more than ever.
Bye now, and God love you.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststandschurch.org.
I'm Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and you are listening to
the Winds of Change.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststandschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy. St. Stan's is an exceptional private elementary school in Chicago, serving preschool, age 3 and 4, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, and first grades. We incorporate Catholic values and rigorous academic social-emotional learning, Chinese, Spanish, STEM, and more, providing our students with leadership and life skills to transform our world. St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy is conveniently located 1 block north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy Expressway. To schedule your tour, visit ststandschicago.org. ststandschicago.org.
I'm Father Tom Coyes, Winds of Change guest host, and you are listening to the Winds of Change.
Here is an update on the Fulton Sheen petition.
We Catholics stand just inches from the goal line to have the saint we desperately need now, Venerable Fulton Sheen, publicly declared blessed. Yet new obstacles keep arising to delay this from happening. The Diocese of Peoria is now requiring the unanimous support of the U.S. bishops behind the beatification of Fulton Sheen before a new date is set for the ceremonial Mass. This has never been necessary in the Church's history. The Fulton Sheen Movement's petition drive to set a new date soon for Sheen's beatification Mass now has 10,000 Catholics from around the world clamoring for this. We need this voice magnified by hundreds of thousands more Catholics. And you can help us do that. Take action. Go to FultonSheenMovement.com and sign the petition and share it everywhere, because everyone agrees we need Blessed Fulton Sheen now more than ever.
Bye now, and God love you.
St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, is open 24 hours a day, 7 days per week, for adoration of the Blessed Sacrament in the iconic monstrance. The Blessed Sacrament is reposed during the celebration of Mass and during special events. St. Stan's doors are always open for adoration. Come anytime, day or night. St. Stan's is located 2 blocks north of Division on Noble, right off the Kennedy. Visit ststanschurch.org.
I'm Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and you are listening to
The Winds of Change.
We are the students of St. Stanislaus Kostka Academy.
Your children can join them for face-to-face classroom instruction. Visit ststanschicago.org to find out how.
And you're listening to The Winds of Change.
Hey, hello. Hello, everyone. I'm sorry for some technical difficulties.
Well, just like in radio, it says, please stand by.
My goodness. Well, we're going to get through some Chesterton tidbits here for your spiritual benefit, whether by hook or by crook.
Well, you wrinkle my brain. That's all I can say.
I'm trying to put some meat behind this wonderful author that is sometimes confusing for a lot of people. We have a Chesterton book club going on, and as I'm enjoying each and every page and paragraph, a lot of folks are saying, what does he mean? What's he saying? I'm trying to give it a little, trying to break it down for you, shall we say. Anyways, I started the chapter called The End of the World, and he, meaning Chesterton, is speaking about not so much the end of time, like when the world is going to end in an apocalyptic storm of fire and brimstone, but the end of the world, like take the gospel to the end of the world, or go homebody in a lot of ways. He loves and he sees the beauty, the comfort, the goodness of a home, mother and father and children working, even in a small family business, etc. And so in his time, there was a lot of discoveries going on around the world. The Antarctic was being explored. Australia was a colony of England. And so that was like the end of the world. And people were coming back from their travels because they saw more of the physical world. They seemed to think they didn't need the truths of Catholicism or Christianity, and even in general, because their broader, their new discoveries of foreign, faraway lands, they misinterpret a lot of things. Anyways, so he starts his chapter on the end of the world about this walking through the woods, and he has a new religion called higher thought. Now, what you and I have to immediately compare this to is the some of the silly conclusions, some of the skewed lessons that teachers are teaching in college, high school, and I dare say even in grade school at times. Shall we say that? Can we say that? We'll say that. Anyways, so here's what he says, too. In spite of anything said against him, I preferred him to his companions and willingly went with him through the woods, where I could not but feel that his sunburnt face and fierce turfed eyebrows and pointed beard gave him something of the look of Pan, P-A-N, capital P-A-N, that is the god Pan. He's often depicted as half man and half beast, plays the flute. The man, the head of a horse is the man, and the with the four legs behind him, that's or Pan is just one who, I think I'm getting my gods mixed up, one who plays the flute and has sheep hooves, sheep feet, or goat sheep, goat feet. Anyways, Pan is the god, and is the heresy. Pantheism is the heresy that says nature is God. What we see is what you get. In other words, it's a denial of anything beyond the material world. There is no metaphysics. And so this man of higher thought, being a materialist, is what's intriguing Chesterton. So he says, the man questions or points to a church where there's a steeple going up into the sky, and the man takes a look at it and says, here, let's see. He says, do you know why the spire of that church goes up like that? And Chesterton says, I expressed a respectable agnosticism about agnosticism, not meaning that Chesterton was doubting there's a God or not sure if there was a God, but in a agnosticism about why the steeple goes in the air or not. Given a chance, Chesterton would give a beautiful explanation. But to play along with this man of higher learning, he says, I'm not sure. So the man says, it's the same reason as the obelisks, like the one that stands in the middle of St. Peter's Square, which was taken from a pagan temple, shall we say, the phallic worship of antiquity. So he's this man of higher religion, is higher thought, anti-religious higher thought, is complaining that Christianity is no different than paganism because the spire represents what the obelisk represented to the pagans, namely a phallic symbol that are over-sexualized. Then Chesterton says, I looked at him suddenly as he lay there leaning above his goat-like beard, and for the moment I thought he was not Pan, but the devil. No mortal words can express the immense and insane incongruity and unnatural perversion of thought involved in saying such a thing at such a moment and in such a place. Isn't that precious? And you wonder why that kind of thought does enter into some of the intellectuals' minds, namely that Christianity is no different than pagan religions. And I think it has something to do with the fact that people recognize that the ancient pagan religion had their sexual gods, as it were. There was even religious rituals of super hedonistic activity, shall we say. And they would complain about Christianity because Christianity makes too much of sexuality. They're always talking about marriage and making such a big deal out of it. And so I think that's why the elitists, and this is why this elitist was telling Chesterton that the steeple was going up into the sky, just like the pagan obelisks were. Here's the interesting thing that I had to look up, because Chesterton often does this in his books. He gives you a reference to something that was probably very popular in his time, but us modern readers are in the dark, shall we say. So he says this, it would be worthwhile to mention the name of this ardent promoter of higher thought, an interpreter of primitive religious origins, or at any rate, the name by which he was known. It was Luis de Rougemont, R-O-U-G-E-M-O-N-T. He was a Swiss-French man. I don't know who he was, but if you do a little research on him, you find out why Chesterton uses him as an interesting character of this elitist, anti-religious twist that was taking over England, and we must admit, it's taking over today. Luis de Rougemont, they say, was a Swiss man who he grew up in England, and became he went to Australia on a merchant ship, you know, because England did have Australia as a colony. So he went there, and unfortunately was shipwrecked. I think he bought a ship and found himself shipwrecked in some of the travels, maybe even between Australia and New Zealand. Anyways, they found the ship, but they didn't find him. So he shows up in England 30 years later and says that for the past 30 years, he had to survive all on his own in the inland wilderness of Australia, living with the Aborigines, native Australian indigenous, and how he survived and had to defend himself. He had to learn how to fight alligators and was talking. So he went on a lecture circuit. It was very popular just before, in the late 1800s, early 1900s. So Chesterton would have known him quite well. So anyways, this guy, Louis de Rougemont, goes around lecturing. But then a lot of people started questioning him. Did you really live for 3 years with the Aborigines? He said in his lectures that he learned their language, but he would never speak any of it. He wouldn't share any of those, he wouldn't. And so people say, oh, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right. You would think he'd be able to at least share a few of the words of the Aborigines. So they started questioning him, and he kind of turned out to be a big fraud. He was then renamed, not the great survivor of a shipwreck and the survivor of 30 years in the interior of Australia. But he was known as the great liar, the greatest liar. And he had to change his name, and he had to move a number of times. He took a couple different jobs. Anyways, that's the guy who Chesterton points out. Chesterton does that a lot in his books, is that he'll use a character that was pretty well-known in his time but is quite unknown to us. But once you do a little research and you find out who he's referring to, his points become clear. Because the guy was sort of a snob, and he was giving lectures about what the origins of human civilization were like. He lived with the Aborigines, who were sort of stuck in time, as it were. Their primitive rituals, their violent lifestyle, etc., lack of moral principles, all that kind of stuff. That was one thing that Chesterton was criticizing, that anthropologists get it wrong when they think they can describe very clearly what is very unknown scientifically about the early civilizations of man. And especially if we take the story of Scripture that God created Adam and Eve, there was a paradise. We lost that through original sin. It doesn't necessarily mean that all the different communities of early humans were barbarians and anti-religious and pagan believers. There certainly would have been that. But anyways, Chesterton's main point is that we don't know exactly how those early civilizations existed. So, okay, let's move on here, because we gotta appreciate some of the other parts of Chesterton's criticism of the modern world, because the elites don't want to recognize, accept the great doctrines of Catholicism, especially. Let's see, Chesterton. I gotta explain this too. Chesterton had an admiration as well as a realistic criticism of the ancient world of the pagan gods. He cut him some slack because God hadn't revealed himself in Jesus Christ yet, and there were different civilizations, different cultures before Christ, some better and some worse. And he praises the Roman culture in contrast to the another pagan culture of Carthage, and he focuses on the Punic Wars, those wars between Rome and what really is northern Africa, and I guess part of Greece may have been part of the Punic Wars, but primarily Carthage, which is North Africa. And they the Carthaginians, the people of Carthage, they were warring against Rome as two competing world powers. And Chesterton is glad to point out that he's glad that Rome won those wars. And it's good to realize why Chesterton is glad, and something that we should be glad of too. And that is Rome, with its homespun gods, were created a more docile, a more family-friendly society than the gods of Carthage, because Moloch and Baal, two names we find in the Bible as demonic, not only just bad or imperfect understandings of God versus a worship of evil, a worship of demonic power. And so the gods of Carthage, Moloch and Baal, were promoters of child sacrifice. And that was an abomination to the Roman Empire. And so Chesterton is glad to point out that our Western world, the European civilization that we know today, is built, should not go back into a paganism that worships evil. We might get our gods wrong, but getting your gods wrong is different than embracing evil. I can't help but just throw out the sense of evil that we just saw in the news these past few days with the Hamas attacking the people of Israel and Jerusalem, that it's more than just getting a political argument wrong, or where we sometimes say good people can disagree on how to divide up the resources available, et cetera. Good people can disagree on where a bridge should be built or a stoplight should be put in, or how resources are divided or whatever. But to become sort of a worshiper of evil is a step too far. That's what I hope our society will appreciate, that the beheading of children, the taking of hostages and using them with this sense of we'll kill one Israeli for every building is bombed in retaliation, that there's a sense of evil there that is reminiscent of the battle within the Punic Wars of ancient memory. So, okay. I wonder if we need to take a break here or not. I'm just going to keep going, okay, Eliu? And since we had that long break when we lost connection, I'll just keep going here. So another very fascinating part of what Chester Jean is talking about. Let me take it again, read a little bit what he says. Remember, the gods of the Roman, ancient Rome, were what he calls homespun gods. They were the common people's sense of gods, and they kept the society better than other societies that had more bloodthirsty gods. So he says, and then he's talking about the shepherds, because he's referring to Iliad, who is obviously the Latin, the Roman author, poet of the Iliad and the Odyssey, right? Virgil also wrote poems, eclogues, they're called, and they're poems from common shepherds. They're called the pastoral poems. Pastoral in the sense of a pastor, not like a priest who's the head of a church, but pastoral in the sense of someone who pastures sheep, a shepherd. So these poems in Virgil show a certain respect and a goodness in the pre-Christian world that needs to be appreciated today, so that we don't come to the sad conclusion that all religions are just the same, that there's no superior understanding of God, that anyone's understanding of God is as good as someone else's. He uses the two gods, Moloch and Baal, as a great example. So, and he's very wise in saying we have to appreciate that today. Let me go on here. Let's see. For the shepherds were dying because their gods were dying. Paganism lived upon poetry. That poetry already considered under the name of mythology. But everywhere, and especially in Italy, it had been a mythology and a poetry rooted in the countryside, and that rustic religion had been largely responsible for the rustic happiness. I like the word rustic. I'm going to say it reminds me of, I like log cabins, you know. Doesn't everybody? Well, not everybody, but a lot of people like log cabins. That rustic sense of happiness and peace, of having your own little place in the woods, in the mountains, or at the lakeshore, and wherever it is, there's a kind of a happiness about that. And you don't need a sophisticated religion. You just need a little bit of a rustic religion that allows you to say how beautiful nature is, how much you love to spend time in nature. But Chesterton would go on to say, watch out, don't worship nature. It's a false god, as it were. He says, this religion was not quite a religion. In other words, this religion was not quite a reality. There you got the metaphysics again going, right? It was the young world's riot with images and ideas like a young man's riot with wine or lovemaking. It was not so much immoral as irresponsible. It had no foresight of the final test of time because it was creative to any extent. It was credulous to any extent, meaning those myths were written creatively. A god that has wings on his heels, Achilles, or a god who lives in the ocean, Poseidon, and can take down ships, or what have you, or calm the storms. The mythology was creative to a great extent, and so it was credulous to a great extent. People would believe in anything because that was just the creative way. But it wasn't rooted in reality. That's the key factor. It belonged to the artistic side of man. It even considered artistically, it had long become overloaded and entangled. And I got to stop here for a second, too, because he's criticizing the philosophy and religion, the great thoughts and ideas that come from what he calls mythology or poetry. I will say, in our day today, we would say music and the art world. We can see how crazy some of the lessons. And yet we all like certain music. We all like certain art and what have you. And so music and art can convey good religious truth, but you'll never get the fullness of religious truth with just the ideas you get with music. That's why, young people who spend hours and hours listening to music, and they'll gravitate to it with a song or that song. Let's see, I forgot who sings it. Maybe Michael W. Smith. There's a song that's called Faith. You gotta have faith, faith, faith. You gotta have faith. And it's popular. It was popular, at least, because it would give to somebody who doesn't go to church a sense that they like this song because it's not atheistic, it's not anti-religion, it's religious, because he says you got to have faith. But of course, the song never defines what faith it is. It doesn't define any creed. It doesn't say you got to have faith in Jesus. And if it says you have to have faith in Jesus, it doesn't say who Jesus was. And of course, it is so important for us to remember that the first 300-400 years of Christianity was just a constant debate in trying to find out who Jesus was. How do you clearly express who Jesus was? A lot of heresies revolved around wrong answers to the word Jesus. Who is Jesus? So, just to go on to hear a little bit more, Chesterton writes, there had appeared in more and more flagrant fashion that flower of evil that is really implicit in the very seed of nature worship, however natural it may seem. And here I gotta remind you, for my love for John Denver and his songs that promote nature. Very, very beautiful songs. But there can be an evil that if you're only worshiping nature, you will never get to the true God, because now we know the true God became man, entered into the natural world. The true God wasn't the natural world, right? I have said that I do not believe that natural worship necessarily begins with this particular passion, namely the passion to consult evil powers to get what you want. I am not of the De Romont school of scientific folklore. I'm sure he must have told great stories about the Aborigines' worship services, right? I do not believe that mythology must begin with eroticism, but I do believe that mythology must end with it. Isn't that an interesting twist? If all your religious truth, especially, is derived from, shall we say, your favorite music artist, that's not going to, it doesn't necessarily start with eroticism, but it eventually gets you there. And because when you're talking about human nature and human passions, without understanding the fallenness of human nature and the easy way human passions go wrong, right? I am quite certain that mythology did end it, I'm quite certain that mythology did end in it. In it meaning almost a demonic evil elevation of eroticism to an evil sort. Moreover, not only did the poetry grow more immoral, but the immorality grew more indefensible. What he means by that is people would call on evil gods to get what they want. It's one thing to call on a household god to get what you want in terms of, we need rain, so call upon the rain god so that your crops will grow. Even a Catholic priest will go to a farm field and bless the crops so that they'll grow well. But Chesterton wants us to be appreciative of the fact that it's quite another thing to worship a god who wants you to sacrifice children or human lives to please them. And he points out a good idea that those, like the Aztecs in Mexico, ancient Mexico, that they knew they were doing something awful and horrific, but you had to do something awful and horrific to please the evil god, and you didn't sort of mind it because you were doing it to get what you need, want. God bless you for sticking with us today. Thank you for listening. I'm Father Tom Coy on the Wings of Change on AM 750 WNTV. See you next.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time.